listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live, live, live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, July 21st. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Michael. Good to be here, as always.
Oh, always glad to have you. Welcome to those joining us live. Happy to have you in the chat. Welcome to those listening to the archives. We're always glad that you can catch up with us, and we hope that you can take something away from this discussion we have tonight. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at MetaphysicsInstitute.org and TFUniversity.org. Now, we're going to begin, as always, with our nine abbreviated principles of belief. And those are: 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, and one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. All right, so tonight we're going to have a bit of a freewheeling discussion. We're going to kind of cover some broad topics. We're going to talk about a few things going from, you know, just appreciating the moment of now, to deductive reasoning, to critical thinking, to what's wrong with everybody. All kinds of things we're going to talk about tonight.
Well, Michael and I were having a discussion before the program and you know, throwing around some topics that, you know, trying to stay on target, but we kind of went all over the place. So, you know, my thing, just to start this off, and got me thinking, that's what this program's for, get you thinking. And the radio in my car, I happened to come across a religious station. I have to define this, Christian religious station. And I listened to it for about 30 seconds. I said, gee, I wish I could believe in that.
And then you converted.
Well, you see, my deductive reasoning says, if I pray to that father that he's talking about, that implies that that father created this mess. And that just makes me mad.
Yeah, there's, I mean, what's more terrifying, that you know, there is no God, or that there is a God and it's exactly like the dogmatic Abrahamic religious God? And oh my God, if it's omnipotent, then why are there so many natural diseases and mosquitoes and things? Not to mention, I mean, okay, you can say free will leads human beings to hurt other human beings, but that does not count for the vast majority of human suffering that comes from just nature. Starvation, famine, all of these things.
And of course, these guys are always in the comfort of their own homes and driving nice cars and doing things. And, you know, if you come here, I'll feed you. But now I want to convert you. And, you know, that kind of, we've talked about this a lot in the past, Michael. It's just that deductive reasoning, which partly got Michael and I talking about propaganda and, you know, what we believe. And so think, please feel free in the chat to give us ideas or make comments, ask questions, please, you know, participate. We love that. But it got us thinking about, You know, what do we believe when you all this stuff that's being talked about, whether it's the news or you know, things on forums that I've had issue with lately, you know, in your local community. And it, Wendy, she says, what's wrong with people? I'm convinced COVID eats brain cells. That's funny. I think that there's such a disconnect, I think, and what we have to do is reconnect that and just kind of get to the point, A to B, 1 + 1 = 2, make it really simple.
Right.
And then we don't lose our way in the rhetoric, you know, all this talking that goes nowhere. And it's the propaganda. We have to be careful about what we buy into.
Right.
And, you know, as metaphysical humanists, you know, our main focus, of course, our spirituality, our essence, wondering who we are, why we are who we are, you know, what's my purpose in life.
Yeah.
But it also is about how do we coexist with a world that appears scattered. And, of course, Michael corrected me this before the program to say, it's always been that way. And it's true. But there's such opportunity for us to, in very simple terms, ask the right questions and ask ourselves the right questions. That's the bigger thing. And then being able to ask somebody else a question or make a point without getting argumentative, because that's not what we want to do.
Right, not in an emotional way.
No, and again, to be able to step back and kind of be neutral about it.
Sure.
That's really tough if somebody's in your face, however.
Oh, well, you have to be able to have a debate or a classic argument without offending and getting... Because I tell you, I swear to you, I am certain that maybe with a few exceptions, there are literally nothing... there's nothing more I love in life than a good argument. I love getting into a debate. I love going back and forth. I love sparring. I love all of it. I just love it. And it took me a minute until I realized not everybody does. And now some people are getting irritated. I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm not going to do that anymore. But at the same time, I will say this. I've often had close friends who, in many ways, philosophically view things differently. And we would have, you know, debates. We would debate politics. We would debate philosophy. I tend to be more, well, we all obviously know that I'm a bit, you know, secular with a bit of spirituality. I do believe in something greater than myself and something that is deeper to the universe. There is a layer of immense mystery that is just a wonderful thing to try to behold and try to comprehend what could possibly be that next level of existence. There is something there, but obviously I'm not a dogmatic Christian, and these days I look at the Abrahamic religions and it's so similar, and I was actually thinking about, you know, talking about some of the Eastern philosophies that tend to be a little different. You can't even classify them the same way, which maybe we'll have time to get into later. But, you know, I think that it is through a good back and forth, a good debate, and through deductive reasoning and critical thinking that we can overcome some of these issues, and we can try to find that deeper truth. That I think is that's what I took away from what you were saying, Dr. Hunter.
And Michael, I just think it takes really confident people to have good debates.
Yeah,
and I think that
I don't know if I would consider myself as especially confident. I try, you know, but I doubt myself all the time. But,
no, you know, it's real. Let me give you an example. I find it really exciting. Every Wednesday, as everybody knows now, I spend with my grandkids, and we're doing a cooking summer. Every Wednesday, we cook different things. Today, we made bannock. So we're learning about breads and so on. So my grandson was, you know, going to put this bannock in the frying pan, and it was his turn. I'd explained how. I'd shown him how. And, of course, it plopped in there. His fingers were too close to the vat. And he said, "Ooh, was that okay?" And I said, "No, that was the absolute wrong way to do that." And he looked at me. He didn't flinch. He didn't, his feelings didn't get hurt. He said, "Okay." I said, "Let's do it again." And so he asked me every step of the way, "Is this how I should do it?" "Yes, and you keep your fingers away from that, because you'll burn your fingertips in that fat really easy." So just showing him. And then I said, and he says, "Okay, did I do it right?" And I said, "That's the way to do it. Bravo. You did a great job." And then he was, no, to me, when you have that, to me, it's kind of yes or no a lot of times. And was this good? No. Was this good? Yes. So I love to watch in them this self-centeredness, and they're okay with, you know, being me playing a Gordon Ramsay every now and again, and their feelings are not hurt. You know, it's now, that's not to say it's not a bit abrasive, but they listen and they take that into consideration in those teaching moments. But it's that being able to take that, you know, constructive kind of, again, I'm going to use the word criticism, and be okay with that. But then when you show the better way and they do it well, then, you, man, the accolades are endless. Right. That's great.
Well, and let's not forget, criticism is not inherently a bad thing. Needless criticism, cruel criticism, and outright lies when you're criticizing somebody, that is wrong.
Yes.
But
most people are not self-possessed that way. You know, right. Dr. Kelly talks about it all the time. Most people, and I don't like to generalize most, but it appears to be, in my experience, that people's feelings get hurt really easy. The defense to, you know, their position isn't, it's like, you know, that's not making any sense. And then if you kind of challenge that, or you ask more questions, they just get pissy about it.
Right.
And so there's a lot of this disconnect in an emotional sorting of the mind.
It's when occurring. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No.
I was just going to say, it's, you know, people, they feel threatened with their worldview. And it takes a little bit of, I don't know, either courage or nihilism to not, you know, to get to a point where it doesn't really affect you in that way. But I ought to look this up. It's been going around a little bit lately, and I love this quote. It was a civil rights icon and a gentleman who said this. He said, and I'm going to look it up because I do want to attribute it. I love America more than any other country on earth deeply, and for that reason I reserve the right to criticize her perpetually.
It's a good one.
And that is the absolute truth. To criticize something is not to, you know, say that it, you don't love it. And this kind of, you know, love it or leave it, well, first off, your definition of what you think it is being in this, it could be any country, because ultimately you have a certain brand of nationalist that thinks that their way is the only way, when, especially in a lot of modern day countries, Canada, the United States, places all over the world, they're very diverse, cosmopolitan, increasingly so. And it just, oh, I don't know where I'm really going with this, but the bottom line is that, you know,
a criticism is a learning opportunity.
Right, exactly.
Provided as you have qualified it so well, as long as it's not in a negative. It's to support and progress, not to take down and oppress. And I think that's where people kind of misunderstand that. But, you know, I think that basic deductive reasoning isn't there. And these teaching moments are lost, and we get lost in the propaganda. There's very little gray for people. You're either this anti-vaccine or the pro-vaccine. You know, in the middle somewhere. You're either pro-mask or anti-mask, or you're, you know, people don't realize Republicans, Democrats are pretty much the same because they're all capitalists. Just one's a little bit kinder than the other to general people.
That's, well, there's some debate wiggle room in there, and I just was mentioning how I like to argue, so I'm gonna save that one for later.
Go for it.
Well, I think we also kind of want to avoid being overtly political, but I would say that, well, I guess the only point I would make is that degrees do matter, and that...
sure, they do.
There is one thing that we also need to think about when we use critical thinking is nuance and complexity. Mm-hmm. And I have been guilty of this because it is a human shortcut. We as human animals, we have the shortcut to stereotype, to simplify, to make it easier to categorize information and to react quickly. And that inherently means that you can generalize. And, you know, one thing I think about when it comes to the United States is how massive a country it is, and not only in population, albeit, you know, we're dwarfed by some others, but in cultural diversity, especially in metropolitan areas, and it's just from city to city or from state to state can be really different. But that being said, I think that's true for many places in the world. I'm lucky enough to have friends internationally, like you, Dr. Hunter, as well as a very close friend of mine who I've known for many, many years. She is Bengali. She was born in the United Arab Emirates. She's Muslim, so it's always been an interesting... And she's more modern, so we have interesting discussions. I tell you that I like to be friends with and debate with people that I don't always agree with when it comes to philosophical things, but I always respect every human's right to make their own decisions for themselves, and she respects everybody's right to make their decisions, and that is one of the key things to having a good, healthy back and forth, it's mandated that you respect another human's right to decide for themselves. But,
well, I think respect gets lost when people are trying to upstage. And I think that that's also some of what we see, and that diminishes the ability to critical think. You know, that I'm special syndrome. You know, we can go on to all these little aspects of it.
But I am special.
Of course you are. But too special. You know, I was talking to an old friend of mine, and she said when she was first newly single after a divorce, and... You know, it's really cold. She's going to work one morning and she was just really angry. Angry, like, why do I have to get up? And why do I have to go to work? And why is it, you know, it's 30 below? And she said she stopped at a red light, looked around, and this little voice in her head said, yeah, so does everybody else. So yeah. She said that put a new perspective on it. You know, we're all in this together.
Absolutely.
And she said then she just stopped being angry. She got it. She said, what makes you so special in that way? We are unique and special, but you know what I'm saying. It's that separation when we think we're more special, better, different, something. And when all that happens, we lose this ability to critically think and decipher information that is coming at us. There's very little that I read in the news that I believe. I think there's likely a thread of truth in all of it. But it's the spin. Mm-hmm. And so the first thing I think about, who wrote that and where's the spin? Who benefits from this? And it's not that people are lying so much as they're giving it their own spin.
And often, kind of in an unknowing way, people, you know, the unconscious is powerful. And it influences your conscious thought. You inherently want to believe something that's going to make you feel better. So I've always challenged, if I want something to be true, I'm much more skeptical than it is. Because inherently I'm going to be biased towards trying to believe something that supports my existing worldview or something that would make me happier that I want to be true. So I have to double check it because you know, I'm going to make mistakes, I'm going to err, I am aware that I'm a human animal and that part of that existence is trying to overcome these evolutionary shortcuts that humans have made to stereotype, to kind of be tribal, you know, something else we've kind of been talking about a lot. And it's, we've grown to a point where we can be conscious of it, we can change it, and we can overcome it. It's interesting how you kind of have now two broad groups of people. You have people that would embrace a global government, and you have people that are terrified of a global government. And, you know, cards on the table, I'll say I would be in support of a one world government. In the sense that if it was, well, not to be
But too, you watch but, a lot of sci-fi movies, Michael.
Well, touche. But at the same time, I do think that if it was a system that was, and, you know, to quote Lincoln, well, paraphrase because I don't know I'm doing it in the right order, you know, of the people, by the people, and for the people, and that can, the one thing that I think must always be in place is the people having a voice in their destiny. In whatever that means, be it direct democracy, representative democracy, they have to be able to have a say in what happens to them. And that's the most core thing. Economics is debatable. Economic systems are debatable. And any system is only as good as the people in it. That is why we need to focus on our social evolution, our moral evolution, to get to a point where, you know, we are more evolved as a people, so some of these harsh realities that we live with, that, you know, people say it's a dog-eat-dog world, you have to do whatever you can to get ahead. No, it's not. You make it that way by your choices.
I think, though, what is it that we're participating in when we don't know? In other words, I'm asking, I can have an opinion about something, but I know very little about it. So what am I opinioning on?
You know?
And I think that there's so much information now that it's very hard to get to know a lot about everything. So you have to participate and have a voice with kind of wherever you know you're best suited, if that makes sense, or what your best thing is. So, yeah, democracy where everybody has a voice, but what are they voicing when they don't know what they're talking about and they don't even understand how the system works?
Well,
so
and
this
then,
is my concern.
And then how do you protect the minority? How do you prevent a tyranny of the majority? There is a balance to everything.
I watched a wonderful Russell Brand video this week, and he was talking about how Amazon now uses a hiring app for their drivers that also fires their drivers.
Oh,
there's
man.
No HR department. There's no human contact. There's no appeal process because it's all through an app. And he was talking about that very thing about artificial intelligence being that buffer between whether or not somebody's working today, what they can't ask about what wage they're earning because it is what it is. People are just happy to get some money. But what does that do to, you know, it's basically enslaving a group of people, you know, who don't have a say because there's nobody to say it to. And that's very alarming to me. I'm not opposed to artificial intelligence. However, you know, and as we evolve with our technology, but when you have to apply to an app, and if you don't do enough deliveries, you're not fast enough, there's no accounting for traffic, or, you know, you had to stop and have a bathroom break or any of that, and it just said, no, you're not performing, and it fires you. And Dr. Stevens says it sounds like they need a union. Well, they've tried to unionize, and, you know, Bezos was too busy, don't you know? But it's, and so there's also this other, as I think I've mentioned before to you, that HireVue, V-U-E, is also another app that's being used. And it's a buffer. A lot of corporations are using it now to do the initial interviews. So you have, and it gives you all the prerequisites. You have 30 seconds to prepare your answer, 3 minutes to give it. There's five questions, and this is what you do for a video. It's taking 500 impressions of your face, your expressions, and of course that's building in the AI in its data bank, if you will. It claims that it doesn't do facial recognition, but it's certainly doing its studies. Now I'm thinking, how can a computer know what an impression is of a human being? Now I know somebody's inputting that, but now it's going further. So there is no appeal system with this app, by the way. There's nobody to call to say, what could I have done better? It's now the bridge. So when you're talking about discrimination, it is one way to discriminate without, you know, any legal recourse, because it's an app. You know, they can blame it on the technology. They didn't mean to.
That was a glitch. I'm sorry, buddy.
So yeah, this is what's interesting about the disconnect I'm talking about, and how our reasoning capabilities appear to be diminishing when all your decisions are made for you, the rules are laid out for you.
It becomes an algorithm, and there needs to be, you know, fair enough.
So I think people need to step up. And I mean, I'm getting older, and I'm going to be out of this game. It's all these generations coming up behind that this is the world and reality that's being created. And it is going to be a way big them and down there those. And, of course, Dr. Stephen said, yes, but the company programs the app. But you input that, and then it starts to go on a mind of its own. So they're deciding who they want and how. And I just find it interesting that how it affects the human psyche. If I know that I have to go talk to a computer, it's really that step further about knowing what keywords to have. You know, in your cover letter and your resume, you send that in and the computer looks for all those in the algorithms, and yeah, you're a keeper or not. This is one step further. So people got to work. They want to work. They want to support their families. They, you know, they want to participate and take care of themselves and be self-responsible. But you're now answering to a machine. And the company controls the machine, so that divide is greater. And that middle class, that is only 100 years old, I might add, is now diminishing. It's evaporating. So until that few at the top get their teeth kicked in, you know, and we start participating with a greater, stronger voice, then...
By the way, asterisk, for legal purposes, this is metaphorical only. Do not kick anybody's teeth in.
That's wonderful. What was it, that Burger King in the U.S. where they put up that sign, you know, we quit, sorry for the inconvenience? They were having trouble during the heat wave. They had no AC. Oh, it was just awful. So they couldn't work. They walked out. Yeah. Well, the company said, oh, that's not our policy. But then they went and fired all that staff and hired new staff, and life goes on as it was before with no AC. So, I mean, that's the issue here. So it has to be a wider, you know, a wider empowerment. But until we start thinking better, and I'm not talking the conspiracy type of thing, Michael, not at all. We need to start thinking better in our daily lives, that deductive reasoning, that stop looking to getting rescued. Stop looking for the knight in shining armor. Stop looking for God to save you. You know, it's that, you know, that Disney fairy tale kind of thing. That, you know, we are the people. And as you say, we the people. And but we the people, who are we and how are we thinking? And until we get our reasoning back, to say, no, I can make this decision, and I'm good with that, and I might change my mind. We also need to be able to say, whoa, I screwed up. Whoa, you know, that's bad. desist a learning curve and not take it personally.
Well, yeah. We need to be able to admit that we're wrong, and many of us have the best of intentions. And the truth is, people who do evil things often do not think of themselves as evil. They view it as justified, they view it as what's right, they are twisted, it's wrong. But we all need to be able to challenge our own perception of our own certainty. And I try to remind myself that every day, because I am one. You know, I can be opinionated, as some of you may have gathered from time to time. But I try to remind myself that there is much I do not know, and I have much to learn.
Oh, I'm the first one to say that. But if somebody is, making, up on a soapbox talking stuff, and I look at them and say, well, I just don't believe in that. And they go, what? I say, no, I don't. Well, why? And I just shrug my shoulders, and that doesn't make sense to me. Usually that's the end of it, because intuitively knowing if this is going to be a good discussion or if this is going to be an argument, and I don't want to go there. But Dr. Stephen is saying in the chat, the tipping point for humanity always results in strikes or quitting, and it's usually a wake-up call to management. I totally agree, but it has to be a massive one. And I think that there are some great movements, and we can take climate change as one example. How many people have been talking about this is different from your daily weather report. This is the actual climate on the planet's changing. Would it naturally occur to some degree?
Sure.
Absolutely. But what we're doing is contributing to that and speeding up that process. So, now we've got floods and fires and and they're saying, yeah, there could be a problem here.
Well, and let's point out, too, that, yes, we are going through the initial phases of a mass extinction event due to human activities. That's just a scientific fact. And I'm not trying to belittle it by my tone, but it's happening. But the Earth will survive. Climate change is...
We may not.
Well, that's the thing. The Earth's going to be fine, ultimately. The Earth has gone through 5 extinction-level events far worse than anything that's going on right now. And there will be another ice age. Yeah. It's just the natural course of things. This is going to put it off by a few hundred years. It's going to make... And I personally don't think climate change in and of itself is going to cause the end of humanity. It's going to cause mass suffering and readjustment. If it leads to a bad enough war due to resources and things like that... All right, maybe. But it's going to cause a lot of suffering needlessly.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a...
I want to say, though, as much as I do look around and say, whoa, there's some issues here, it excites me to see that we're in a consciousness shift. It excites me, coming from a time where... Oh, a card reader could be put in jail 40, 50 years ago for fortune telling. Now people are talking meditation, intuition, incorporating that into daily life. So there's great advancements. As metaphysicians, this is very exciting. It's the consciousness that I find troubling, and that how we each need to be really clear with ourselves. Who we represent and how we do that in our spheres of influence so that we become the greater contagion, not the negative. So I'm excited, but I also know there's work to do.
Yeah.
So, that's my soapbox.
Humanity will always be a work in progress.
Yeah, it will indeed. I know this is our time to shift gears, Michael.
Yep, we are segueing into our inner oracle cards we're going to pull, and the tarot cards. So, hopefully...
Thanks for everybody hanging in there with us. We just have a good conversation sometimes, and, sometimes all over the place, but coming down to the point of being good thinkers. So I hope you find that. Michael and I can spar, too. We never go too far.
Well, and this is... I'll give you a little inside track into my mind if you're ever talking with me. Sometimes I do take, not necessarily an opposite. I'm never going to argue something that I fully, truly believe is evil or wrong, but I will take a contrary opinion for the sake of fleshing out an argument.
Oh, really, Michael?
I know. Shocker.
I didn't know that.
But that's good time. So, yep, we're going to be transitioning into cards this evening. And, of course, throw your name in chat. We'll make sure we draw one for you. Inner Oracle card from the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism, created by Dr. Kelly here. And it is mostly just to get you thinking. So we're going to wait for some people to... All right. Excellent. We have Jamil coming up first.
All right, Jamil.
All right. Number 9, Empowerment. Good card. Let's see. Taking your power back is literally all-powerful and absolutely priceless. It alone is the solution in principle for virtually every problematic circumstance in your life, from a bad relationship to spiritual harassment. Retaining your power means to retain your wholeness. When you are whole, you are empowered. Empower others by doing no harm and doing right. Sharing the best of yourself is encouraging and uplifting to yourself and others.
Well, I like that, and especially when it's paired with the Three of Clubs. So the Three of Wands in tarot language. Looking into your future. You know, I think, well, three is a trinity, right? It's putting all the elements together, the beginning, the middle, and completion. And when you have that, you're still looking forward. There's something restless that wants to look forward. So, Jamil, I'm going to say that with empowerment, you're feeling stronger, feeling more empowered. You're just looking at the future and looking at your next steps. So you're ready to do that. Just, I really want to say, don't let anybody get in your way. That's what I want to say. So if there's any negative thinkers around you, say, thank you very much. I'll take that into consideration and keep moving forward. So,
good message.
Awesome.
All right.
We have Dr. Jeff next. Good to see you here, Jeff.
Always glad to see you, Dr. Jeff. And tonight I have number 31, Sacred Obligations. A sacred obligation is a sacrosanct duty that any higher being would render for the highest good of all concerned. Sacred obligations include do no harm, do right, pay it forward, and uphold individual value. Value all life, extend tolerance and equality, control and change only what one is entitled to control and change, evolve and grow as a human being with higher awareness, promote knowledge, not fear, and more. Continue to aspire to your highest good by recognizing and fulfilling your sacred obligations.
Jeff, I'm going to say I think you're going through a spiritual rebirthing from what I'm seeing here. So sacred obligations with two of spades, and I said, whoa, a bat card. That's what I call that intuitive card, where you don't necessarily have constructive information, but you've got an intuition and you're not sure, a crossroads kind of thing. But I thought, what is that? So I pulled the death card, which in my view is birth and a change. And spiritual rebirth can feel scary for a minute and kind of alarming. It's like, you know, being on one of those floating bridges. You say you're getting to the other side. But, you know, you take a breath and say, you know what, I'm halfway there. So there's no turning back. You can't undo what you know. You can't unknow what you've done and the lessons you've learned. So it's like halfway across that bridge, say, yeah, I'm going. And you're changed, but you don't know really how you're changed till you get to the other side. And you're getting to know yourself in a new way. So that sacred obligations is your grounding in that who of your being. And, you know, I always find these moments really moving because I say, oh, this is really cool. scary for a minute, but really cool, Jeff. I'm excited for you. It might not feel good when you're inside of that for a minute, but hang in there. You're going to really like this later. So it's a big light over there. Keep going.
Love it. Love it. Yep. And, you know, our next person this evening is our card keeper, Wendy, and she pointed out Dr. Jeff has had both of these cards before. So we're seeing a bit of a pattern. Interesting. Mm-hmm. All right. And Wendy, so glad to have you with us tonight. I have number 24, Truth.
Good one.
There are many ways to discover cosmic truth. It begins with knowing who you are and why you are who you are. This is your truth. Discovering cosmic truth involves further discovering the truths that are often concealed within a relationship or a life situation. Yet, the only truths kept secret are those we will not see. This is a time of deep introspection to intuitively gauge the way ahead. This card may indicate that there is a truth in something or in a direction.
Well, that's paired with the Six of Hearts, Wendy. That often indicates family, your close, let's say your extended family, your friends, your community, and participation in that, and being more truthful with yourself and with others, and really reinforcing your relationships. So I'd say there's some new bonding going on, and maybe people you hadn't been particularly close with before, you're bonding more with them now. And other people, you're secure enough to let go a little bit and kind of let the wind blow between you. And it feels safe, and it still feels good. So I'd say that, you know, it's just a warm, fuzzy feeling I get for all this. So good for you. And I'm so glad to see and hear that you're feeling better, Wendy. I know it's been a bit of a road, but she got all clear from her doctor. She can go back to work. So congratulations. That's awesome.
Very hearty congratulations. That is awesome to hear. All right.
Who's next, Michael?
And we have Ronnie next.
Okay.
And Ronnie, I have number wild card number 3, Blocks. Let's see. There is a time for movement and a time to sit still. What may seem like blocks could be an opportunity to reevaluate while allowing the universe to open new doorways. At times, we simply need to get out of our own way in order for events to unfold as they should. It can feel like free-falling when a leap of faith is required. If blocks continue, it may be a time for a new direction. Do not dismay. Blockages serve purposes. Diligence and insight is required, and remain open.
Well, Ronnie, I pulled the star. That's in the major arcana. The star has many elements. It represents water, air, the elements, earth, and it's a flow of life. So it's whatever's, you know, kind of thinking that coming and going of energy. It's also about messages. You know, think of listening to that little birdie, you know, kind of in your head or from other people. So with blocks, it's really saying about finding that, in a way, a path of least resistance. There's always a time to challenge things, no question. But it's finding that way like water, flowing forward and into your future, and really paying attention to all the signs. So I feel good about that for you, and it's really just keeping your senses sharp and your observation skills, if you will. Not being too forward, not being too, certainly not aggressive, making things happen, but kind of in a gentler way, a more observing way. So that's kind of the message that I get from that. So you're moving forward, just you got to really use your intuition. That's awesome.
I really like that. Good message.
Yeah.
All right.
Who else? Because I have lost track of the names in the
we chat. We have Dr. Kevin next. And I believe Dr. Kevin is our last card of the evening.
Okay,
so I'm just going to scan through. But let's see. Whoop. One just fell out. Yeah, number one, perfection. Good card to fall out.
Yep.
Let's see. Perfection. Always remember that you are perfect just the way you are. A perfect work in progress. Always changing and always growing. Today is a reflection of past choices, and tomorrow is changeable by choices made today. This card may indicate that a situation is either perfect or not perfect for you. Embrace all mistakes as they are vital to your growth while striving for a better future. Reflect to see what contributes to your perfect journey and move forward gracefully.
Kevin, I think you've got some new allegiances going on here that are working really well. And I think some things that aren't meant to be in your life now will kind of fade to the wayside. But the Four of Clubs is in support of perfection. So it's the Four of Clubs, that's really about promises, commitments, partnerships. Very often in a reading I say it's the only marriage card, but there are all kinds of marriages, right? You don't have to legally sign a document to be married. And equally, to feel married can be a business relationship. So there's many kinds of bonding in that way, or commitments. So in this perfection, there's this movement of energy and new collaborations, I think, that's happening here for you. So being open to that, you know, I'm often a, I call an optimistic cynic, because I believe anything is possible, but I'm usually jaded when I go into it.
Anything's possible, but it's probably not going to happen, let's be honest.
No, I'm not a pessimist that way. I'm just, you know, I've been around too much, I think. So it's, but being open-minded. You know, it's treating every situation like it's brand new. I think that's what's important. One thing Wendy's just noted, that Kevin repeatedly gets clubs as supporting cards. Now, clubs are changes, right? Clubs represent change and shifts and movement. So I think there's something really cool going on in your life, Kevin. So it just makes me feel good for you, too. So... that's good.
Good. Love to see those trends. It's always interesting.
Well, and thanks for the feedback, folks.
Yeah.
I appreciate those little one-liners saying, yeah, you know, okay, you can relate to what's said. That keeps the energy flowing.
It does. And it's satisfying to know that something's connected. So, you know, glad to hear it. And thank you all for joining us live in the chat. We appreciate this kind of dynamic interaction with everybody. Mm. And I look forward to, you know, kind of talking with you every week, and kind of getting together and exchanging ideas. And
you know,
I'll just finish. We were just going to say, we'd been talking in chat. Just a shout out to some of our regulars we haven't seen in a little bit. If you're catching up on the archives, just know that you're missed. Dr. Edward and Audra, that have often joined us in the past. We hope you're doing well. And Dr. Hunter?
Well, I was going to say, I'm not going to mention names, but I had an inquiry a couple of weeks ago about whether or not I'd be able to help finding missing persons. And I don't do that work, but I'd certainly love to have a discussion about that for intuitives locating people and things, you know, for next week's program, if you're up for it.
Yeah, I think that's a great topic idea. And hopefully might even relate to something that might be of interest to someone in particular. But
awesome. We'll talk about that.
All right.
The search for the missing link, I suppose.
Well.
There's reasons I don't do that work, by the way, which I'll explain next week.
All right. Well, I always love it when we have a topic loaded and ready to go. So we're going to be looking forward to talking about some of the interesting stories that can kind of come along to that location, and people that have been able to do that in the past. So, you know, maybe we can try to come with some examples of stories. And I'm looking forward to your take on it, Dr. Hunter.
Sure.
So, you know, it's been a great discussion tonight. As always, love the, you know, kind of realms of life that human beings go through. We explore so many different facets of this human existence. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Dr. Hunter, for your insights, as always. And any last thoughts before we wrap up?
No, I just want to stay safe out there, everybody. I know that we're in the, you know, it's like exhaust fumes in the skies out here. And I know, but we're not alone. It's all over the country. And there's, you know, things going on all over the place. So take care of yourself. White lights to everybody. You know, take care of each other.
Absolutely. Take care of each other. And one last thing before I forget, while we have a few seconds left, I said I wanted to cite the civil rights icon who had said that quote, and I will. His name was James Baldwin. He was a playwright, novelist, essayist. He was part of the Harlem Renaissance.
And love him.
It is profound. So just wanted to make sure I cited that, you know, very wise individual. So with that, I will leave you all for this week. Looking forward to catching up with all of you next week. Until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.